joining us now. Very pleased to welcome to the show for a Monday, a late edition, but he answered the call. Blur extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien. You got a classy car. You're going to get that retrofitted at some point in time into an EV there, Jeff?
Yeah, probably not.
Let's get into this. Oh, you have a comment on this?
No, I agree with the one talk back. I think that I don't think that an EV is a replacement for a gas powered vehicle. I mean, would I like to have a Tesla at some point? Yeah. Am I going to drive it from, you know, a 40-mile drive to the office? No.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind having a Tesla. It actually might even, to a certain extent, behoove me based off my driving habits to and from work. Although when you account for the winter, suddenly even that option doesn't seem as cost effective as it would have been just because of the fact that I live here in Minnesota and it gets cold.
Right.
Let's go here. There's a lot to this story. I'm going to try to do the condensed version here. And the New York Times did a good job of sort of getting to the heart of what's taken place here. As I mentioned a moment ago, a small town in Kansas has become the battleground over the First Amendment after the local police force and county sheriff's deputies raided the office of the Marion County Record. Raids of news organizations are exceedingly rare in the United States, with its long history of legal protections for journalists. At the Record is a family-owned paper, circulation of about 4,000. The police seized computers, servers, and cell phones of the reporters and the editors. They also searched the home of the publication's owner and semi-retired editor, as well as the home of a council member. Now, here's the reason why they conducted the raid. And there's a lot of details to this. So the searches that were conducted on Friday appeared to be linked to an investigation into how a document containing information about a local restaurant tour found its way to the local newspaper and whether the restaurant owner's privacy was violated in the process. The editor of the newspaper said the raids may have had more to do with tensions between the paper and officials in Marion, a town of about 2,000 north of Wichita, over prior coverage. So I'll stop here real quick and get your initial thoughts on this raid and the rationale that was given by the judge that gave the police the authority to conduct it.
Well, first of all, this is a really sad and disturbing story, and unfortunately, the 98-year-old co-owner of the paper died like 24 hours after this raid was carried out from the stress. Extremely unfortunate. I have concerns about this, John. There's a reference, and I think in one of the stories the links you had sent me about the federal law involved, and so I went and looked up the federal law, and for anybody listening that wants to look it up themselves, it's 42 U.S. Code Section 2000AA. And it talks about how it is unlawful for a government officer or employee in connection with an investigation to seize work product, with a newspaper, book, broadcast, or similar form of public communication. Now, there is an exception for that if there's probable cause to believe the person is committing, an offense to which the materials relate, but they can't. There's also another exception to the exception that says it is still unlawful if the crime that you're investigating relates to the possession of the document. So it sounds to me there was investigation as to like invasion of privacy or identity theft, which would imply that the crime involved would be related to the actual possession of the document, and it would fall into this exception. Now, there's an exception to the exception to the exception, talking about, if it relates to terrorism or child pornography. So it's a complicated statute, but it just seems to me that this stuff was protected. I don't understand why the government was allowed to seize records of a newspaper like this.
Yeah, and it seems really egregious given the rationale behind why they were doing this. So let's get a little bit further into this. So according to the search warrant reported by the Epoch Times, the judge authorized police to seize material related to identity theft allegations of Carrie Newell. She is a local coffee shop business owner. The newspaper reportedly received a tip that Newell allegedly drives without a driver's license after a traffic offense in 2008. So the reporter verified the information Eric Meyer, the co-owner and publisher, told the local media he decided not to publish the story. Instead, he notified the police based on suspicions of being set up by an unknown source. When authorities contacted Newell, she allegedly accused the at the record. She accused the record at a city council meeting of illegally obtaining and disseminating the personal information that only law enforcement, private investigators, and insurance agencies could access. Meyer then published an article sequencing the timeline of events on Thursday, less than 24 hours before the police executed the search warrant. So Newell told CNN, not only did they have information that was illegal for them to obtain in the matter of which they did, but they sent it out as well. She added the paper published the story strictly out of malice and retribution for me asking him to exit my establishment. This seems like a really, like a relatively small issue that prompted a very harsh response. I'm surprised the judge ended up signing off on this.
Yeah, you know, I don't know the judge's motives in this. You know, this what this sounds like, John, is very kind of hometowny, small towny type things.
Right. I mean,
there's obviously a dispute or a feud going on between the business owner and the paper, because that's what. Why else would she have banned them from a town hall featuring a congressman? Right. So there had to have been bad blood initially, and now she's claiming that this is retaliation for that. And you never know. You know, judges are political appointees, right? So you don't know where the judge, you know, comes down in this whole feud. But it just, this one's good. I have a feeling this one's going to be litigated further, and we're going to be hearing more about the government's ability to do things like this. And this is, you know, in this day and age, this is a real concern. And this is no different, in my mind, law enforcement being used to stifle a newspaper from investigating and possibly publishing a story is no different than the government turning around and censoring, you know, and wanting to censor posts on social media.
Right.
All censorship.
I'm actually, I want to say relieved. I'm glad that this happened on a small scale. I agree with you. I think that this is a lot of what we're reading in the story, and the details that are coming out are very relative to the size of the town. There is, in the New York Times piece, it says the Marion County record is uncommonly aggressive for its size. Eric Meyer, one of the reporters, said the newspaper, which has 7 employees, has stoked the ire of some local leaders for its vigorous reporting on Marion County officials, including asking questions about the police chief's employment history. So it sounds like this is, like you mentioned, a lot of small town politics that ended up getting local law enforcement involved. But to the bigger story of this, this could actually end up answering some very larger questions. Because you imagine if this had happened to a much larger entity. I mean, this would be a huge major story. So do you think that we'll get some clarification based off of this particular story, or do you think the small town nature of it really makes it more exclusive to the town of Marion, and it's not really applicable to larger publishing entities?
No, I think that it sounds like that the paper is going to pursue this, up through the courts, and so I do think we're going to have at some point likely a federal court get involved and issue some ruling. I don't think this is the last we've heard of this. The other thing I would say is, if you were in this situation, you know, ethically speaking, law enforcement, they probably should have farmed out this investigation of the paper to another law enforcement body, law enforcement agency, given that the police chief and others in the department had some issues with this paper in the past. It just, the optics don't look good here.
A search warrant for the raid issued by the judge roughly an hour before the search on Friday morning mentions Newell and cited potential violations of laws involving identity theft and the illegal use of a computer. The latter, among other things, forbids using a computer with the intent to defraud or to obtain money, property, services, or any other thing of value by means of false or fraudulent pretense or a representation. Is it possible that there's more that will be revealed as the public, you know, sort of gets into details further? Because this sounds, that in and of itself, unless I'm wrong, sort of sounds broader than the initial rationale that was given for why the raid took place in the first place.
Yeah, there's, I'm sure there's more to come out. You know, these, a lot of times when you have these, you know, when law enforcement is going to, or a prosecutor is going to a judge to get a warrant, you know, you're looking at a probable cause type of situation, and the other party hasn't had a chance, hasn't had notice of it, doesn't have a chance to respond to it, right? So these are proceedings that are you know, in front of just one side in front of the judge. So the judge has only heard one side of the story. So you know, and we see this in a lot of different situations, you know, in various times in this state even, what gets put into those or requests or motions or petitions, you know, a judge can later reverse course on those things if they find out that maybe someone, you know, crafted the narrative in a way that really didn't meet the facts.
One more quick item for you here. Just speaking of the First Amendment, I've been holding on to a couple of articles on this. This came out a couple of weeks back. However, a First Amendment expert said in an interview with the New York Post that blocking the release of the manifesto of the transgender identifying woman who shot six people at the Nashville Christian School would be unprecedented. Deborah Fisher, she is the executive director of the Tennessee Coalition for Open Government, told the Post that there's no real history of victims being able to prevent the release of public crime records. Fisher is also the director of Middle Tennessee State University's Excellence in First Amendment Studies. She says, in this case, the perpetrator is dead, she added. But if the shooter had gone to trial, most likely the writings of the shooter would be part of the evidence in the case about motivation. Now, there are a group of parents and school officials who have moved to keep the manifesto of the 28-year-old woman who killed three children and three adults at Covenant School in March. They've kept that hidden. Fisher said the laws protecting Tennessee victims do not have carte blanche authority over open records laws. So I wanted to get your thoughts on this, because I think everybody continues to be surprised that this manifesto has yet to be released, but you know, yet we haven't seen any sort of legal pushback beyond what the, you know, sort of experts are saying, you know, as it relates to the First Amendment.
Yeah, this is again I'm puzzled by the delay in releasing this. And I understand, you know, I hear I read some comments from some of the victims' families that they don't want to make this person famous. Well, I mean, that's already happened.
Right? Yeah.
We know the identity of the shooter. We know what happened. All that, and you know, just a very terrible story there. Interestingly, though, I'm curious as to why the school itself is involved with trying to suppress the release. You know, in terms of motive of the shooter. You know, as I understand it, the shooter was a former student at the school. Did something happen when they were a student there that led to this, right? So that's concerning to me as to why they would be allowed to suppress that information. I think it has benefit to the public. I understand the concern that they're worried, the political implications of this thing being released, but I think it's educational to understand why someone does this, and I don't think you're going to make the I think that the public's concern in reading it and reading getting an insight into the mind of the killer is more important than trying to, for whatever reason, would be the motivation for suppressing it at this point. I think it should be released.
Yeah, I do as well. And I echo your speculation that perhaps there's more in this manifesto that could potentially damage the Christian school's reputation, which is why there could be some, you know, a bit of collusion going on here between the authorities that have it in the school to keep this quiet. I have a little bit more I'm going to get to on this. However, Jeff O'Brien, I will cut you loose. Thank you so much for coming in on short notice this morning. I really do appreciate it, man.
Well, thanks for reaching out, John.